Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is a Tuesday morning. It's the 21st of July. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we welcome you to the proceedings. Let me introduce everybody to you. Before we do that, a quick reminder that you can be a part of the discussion. Panel at WAMC.org is all you have to do, is write to us at that email address. Do not use any others, just that one. Panel at WAMC.org. Keep your letters short and to the point and on topic, and don't use links or attachments or abbreviations. And for God's sakes, proofread them before you send them, because otherwise we don't know what you're saying. We say all that lovingly, but we do say it, and we thank you for complying. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to the group and introduce them so we can get started quickly. Alan Shartok, good morning. How are you, my friend?
I'm fine. I'm under attack. Jeannie wrote and said, Alan expressed doubt yesterday that Americans would rise up and remove Trump if he wouldn't leave office. It seems Alan hasn't noticed the daily protests in America going on for 2 months. I hope she's right. I haven't seen any proof of that.
We'll wait and see, right?
Yeah, if it happens. He's saying it could happen. I had another letter today saying, how dare you say that the president might not go? Hey, it's the president who said it, not me.
Oh, you are under attack.
Yeah.
Stop
it's
that.
Like, you know, I get up in the morning and, you know, you
all
see the
letters.
Sunshine.
And, yeah, just enjoy the sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. You would never attack Alan, would you, Rosemary?
No. not today. Alan, I was skeptical about his digging his heels in, but this baloney going on in Portland and in now Chicago, I guess, this week, that's martial law. He's who are these guys? This is a whole extra military force we never had before. Seems to me he's getting ready to dig his heels in. I think you're right.
And he wants to make it worse, and this is making it worse, no doubt about it, which is exactly what he thinks will work for him to be reelected.
Well, and the other part of this,
yep,
well, this is our first story, so I'll wait, and but let me finish introducing everybody. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is on the line. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm well and ready to jump in anytime.
Excellent.
Yay.
Well,
we love it when Mike's on, don't we, Joe?
He's the best.
He's the best. He's the voice of stability.
I don't know so much of that.
What'd you say, Rosemary?
I'm feeling sibling rivalry here.
We love all of our panelists the same, Rosemary. You know that.
Yeah, we just
that
love.
Sound like you do.
Mike
no
is just.
Offense.
Like the first day we did this in its first iteration, which used to be the editor of the day, Mike was our first editor, and he's been with us since the inception of the program, which next year, I believe, will be 20 years.
Wow.
So,
we'll have to have a cake.
Yeah, that's right. If we can all get together, we can have a cake.
Right. If we can all get together, we should have a cake.
If not, we'll have a virtual cake. But Yeah, so Mike has been with us for a very long time. So it's just because he's the, you know, has great seniority, Rosemary. Don't get upset. I promise you. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller is with us. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
Hey, Joe, I'm good. Hello to everybody else.
Great to have you here. Thank you
how's
very
your cousin,
much.
How's your cousin PJ, JP?
He's doing well. We're keeping in close touch during this important time.
Good.
All right. Let's get started. We've already sort of gotten started on this story, but it is quite a story, and I think there's a lot to talk about, as just evidenced by what Alan and Rosemary were saying. The president is threatening to send federal law enforcement forces to more cities. It's already happening in Portland and now apparently heading to Chicago. Democrats call the president's plan an American crisis barely 100 days before the election. This from a Washington Post article on the front page this morning. President Trump plans to deploy federal law enforcement to Chicago, threatened on Monday to send agents to other major cities, all controlled by Democrats. Governors and other officials reacted angrily to the president's move, calling it an election year ploy as they squared off over crime, civil liberties, and local control that has spread from Portland, Oregon across the country. With camouflage-clad agents already sweeping through the streets of Portland, more units were poised to head to Chicago, and Mr. Trump suggested that he would follow suit in New York, as well as Philadelphia and Detroit and other urban centers. Governors and other officials compared his actions to authoritarianism and vowed to pursue legislation or lawsuits to stop him. It is important to note that as of my reading of this, all of the officials in these cities, in these states, are saying, please, please, please go away. And they are not. Alan, you started off on this, but I'll let you go on, and we'll start the conversation.
There's not much to say except he wants this. He wants this chaos because he wants he's losing badly in the polls. He figures if he can make security the issue, and who doesn't want security? That's for sure. That he'll win and that he'll turn it around. He's also going to start with his nonsense. Which are not going to be reports on the pandemic, but just this blowhard stuff that he'll be doing at 5 o'clock, and we'll be playing it on our HD2, but not on our regular channel.
If it's available, yes. If available.
If it's available. Good point, Joe.
Yep.
So that's what it is. You know, he is desperate to be reelected, and he figures that this is the way to do it. And of course, he's attacking all the mayors of these cities as quote liberal Democrats. And they are saying, you're just going to make it worse. And he's saying to himself, that's right. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. That's what I think is going on.
Rosemary, before I go to you, I just want to read a quote of the president. The president said to reporters in the Oval Office yesterday, I'm going to do something that I can tell you, because we're not going to let New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and Detroit and Baltimore and all of these. Oakland is a mess. We're not going to let this happen in our country, all run by liberal Democrats. What does that mean, do you think?
Wow. It's he's turned control of cities into a partisan issue. I just think this is so dangerous, and it's another step. This is not a distraction. Those protests in each one of those cities mentioned has had some violence, but they've been largely peaceful. The violence has been very restricted, and what you might expect with any large gathering of people, including certain parties in our own city. This is nothing more than an excuse. It terrifies me that he has this force ready. It's not military. A federal force. What the heck is that? It sounds really unconstitutional to me, and I, again, am not hearing from any of my Democratic representatives saying, other than mayors who have no power on the federal level, saying, what are you doing? What about the Constitution? I hope that happens soon. This is the worst yet.
Well,
and by the way, we're seeing them throw some protester who has nothing to do with anything. He's certainly not violent, thrown into the backseat of an unmarked car. Ladies and gentlemen, if this ain't Nazi Germany, I don't know what is.
It's a lot about the unmarked cars with them just pulling up and taking these people off the streets. So Jeff Merkley of Oregon as a senator said he would introduce legislation to limit the role of federal agents in cities like Portland. This isn't just an Oregon crisis, he said. It's an American crisis. We need to stop Trump before this spreads. Mike, the president is portraying this nation's cities as out of control. He said, look at what's going on, all run by Democrats, all run by very liberal Democrats, all run really by radical left. He added, if Biden got in, that would be true for the country. The whole country would go to hell, and we're not going to let it go to hell.
Well, I think that is somewhat exaggerated. He's been tweeting that Portland has had 50 nights of anarchy, which is absurdly false. I've been reading their local paper, The Oregonian, which is a terrific newspaper. And, you know, they had a story just a couple days ago saying, where are the riots? I mean, they walk through the neighborhoods and there's just nothing going on like it. People are peacefully protesting, and occasionally there are opportunists. Every time there's a march, every time there's a power outage or a flood, where people just use it to vent their own anger and maybe do a little looting. But it hasn't been widespread at all. It's been virtually peaceful every night, and they're trying to whip up a fear that just isn't warranted. You know, there are crimes. I mean, Chicago is, it does have a rise in gun violence and people are dying, and it does need, you know, it would be great if there was federal assistance to help, you know, go in and start community programs that would address the underlying issues that cause this, but that's not what this is. And they're claiming that they have some, you know, code under the Homeland Security Act where they can do this, but it is very, very sketchy, and it is frightening. I agree, Alan. It has shades of Nazi Germany when you have this kind of thing going on.
J.P. Miller.
It's also this federal escalation is exactly what the anarchists and the agitators in those communities want. This is their
Absolutely.
Wild dream, is to have Trump come in and bring troops in. And this action is not about the safety of Portland. You know, if we were focused on the safety of Portland, we would be focused on de-escalating and de-escalation of this. And Trump is doing the opposite. He is escalating it. He thinks this is going to help his, you know, the increased violence and chaos in American cities is a good wedge issue to help him in the suburbs. And this is all about his reelection, unfortunately.
Don't get me wrong, by the way. I have nothing but contempt for those people who take advantage of these situations, the people that that we were just hearing about, you know, people who would loot to benefit themselves, or who want to escalate it and to make it into the fall of democracy, so that they and their Stalinistic friends can get in and do their thing. And it never works out for them, never ever, and it won't this time. It'll just help Trump.
Do you think, Rosemary, I mean, we are seeing a swath, I mean, even in the city of Albany, we are seeing violence on the increase. Certainly in Chicago, 63 people were shot over the weekend, 12 of them fatally.
New York City
is having a horrible problem as well, which is why the president is talking. But are these two separate issues, in your opinion, or are these all being lumped together?
Well, he's lumping them together. What we have is lack of leadership. We're undergoing a period of immense civil unrest right now, brought about, touched off at least, by the police killings in Minneapolis. And the president is taking advantage of that to say, to make this the embodiment of his black vision of the United States. And I don't mean black as an African American.
Right.
I mean in dismal.
Dark vision.
And that is a problem. Of course, no one is in favor of vandalism and violence and shooting, but we have police agencies for that, and then National Guards after that. And if the federal agencies have to come in, federal forces have to come in, it's supposed to be at the request of the governors. All of that has been bypassed, and now there seems to be this super agency force, Homeland Security Force. Where did this come from? What are we going to have, a Space Force next? And he's sending them in without being invited, without there being a proven need for this. New York City, for example, has handled more murders than this. So has Chicago. And notice that he practiced in Portland. Now he's going to a bigger city, to Chicago. I just think this is so incredibly sinister and far more dangerous than the violence that these protests have been engendering in a few cities.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot of Chicago made clear on Monday that the federal agents would be no more welcome in her city than they have been in Portland. Quote, "We don't need federal agents without any insignia taking people off the street and holding them, I think, unlawfully." She said this yesterday. She said, "That's not what we need in this city right now." JP.
Yeah, this is just like what everybody's been saying. It is about his reelection. He knows he is now losing suburban women. He is losing suburban men, and he is not going to win these cities. He knows he's not going to win these cities. But the message going into November to white women, white men in the suburbs is, this is what's happening in our cities right now. It's going to come to the suburbs unless you elect me. You hear Rudy Giuliani say that. You hear Trump say that. This is all about real. This is a re-election strategy, not a we're going to bring safety to the city strategy.
The administration is saying that the deployment to Chicago is separate from Portland because in Portland they were there to protect the federal courthouse. So, Mike, I mean, there is, I guess there is a difference, but the action, at least by them threatening to send the troops in at all, seems that it would be similar in nature.
Well, that's a good distinction. I mean, in Portland, ostensibly, they were protecting federal property, which I guess the law does allow the federal government to do. You know, if you deface a post office or a federal building, you can be arrested under federal law, and they can certainly defend those buildings. But they've been applying it very broadly in Portland. But then in Chicago, it is. I mean, they're having a very difficult time, as they often do. Many have observed that the crime that a lot of cities are experiencing now, New York City and Chicago, may be sort of a fallout of the whole botched response to the coronavirus. You know, people have been pent up for a long time, and they are finally getting out. The temperatures are very warm in the cities. You know, all the things that contribute to stress, that contribute to crime, are happening all at once. And it was sort of on hold for a while, and it's catching up a little bit, perhaps. But it is exactly as you say, JP. I mean, it is the wedge issue. The president actually said that Joe Biden wants to get rid of the suburbs. He sees this as an opportunity to frighten people who live outside these cities, to scare them and make them fear that whatever's happening nearby is going to be in their neighborhood soon. All you have to do is think about that couple in St. Louis when right. the peace marchers marched past their house to so they could protest outside the mayor's house, and they were waving their guns. You know, people are,
and they're now facing felony charges.
Right. But it sounds like they're going to get off easy. You know, they want to have have them get community service or something. But it is a wedge issue, and it is all about reelection. I think you nailed it, JP.
We have to go to a break, so we'll do that. We do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'll continue this conversation and include your letters. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller on the program this morning. panel@wamc.org, if you'd like to join in, and we'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A lot of letters on this. We're talking about the fact that troops could be moving into other cities, not just Portland, where protests were people who involved in those protests were picked up by agents in unmarked vehicles. We have this one from Stephen, who said the mayors and governors don't need to sue the Trump administration. They need to deploy state police forces to protect protesters and stand up to the secret police force. Robert says, I'm scared. Is there something we can do to push the legislative branch to stop Trump's Gestapo? My congresspeople are not Republicans, so I don't know if they can do anything. This is the scariest move ever. He's openly showing what he really wants to be, an authoritarian dictator. I can't believe the Republicans are standing by and letting this happen.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. I think that's a great letter.
Reed says, so I'm hearing about people being picked up in unmarked cars by federal agents. Has anyone spoken to the people taken into custody who have returned? Where are they taken to? What are they charged for? Are all people accounted for? Rosemary, do you know the answer to that?
I do not. I actually tried to look that up today. Have they returned? I don't think we know that yet.
Some have. One guy, I think he was one of the first ones sort of snatched off the sidewalk by these agents.
Great.
He was taken to a federal courthouse and kept there for a couple of hours, wasn't charged with anything, and then eventually they let him go. But he never knew. They wouldn't even answer what agency they're with. It's frightening. And they weren't, as pointed out, they weren't wearing insignias or anything like that either.
There's no official recognition, although we believe it's out of Homeland Security, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. The acting, ICE person said in an interview that, they're invoking a federal code, and they name some numbers, and the Homeland Security people are just having ICE do it, and they have the right to do it, and it's got to be, it does stem. I mean, one thing I read was that it does stem from some broad powers granted to Homeland Security after 9/11, which a lot of people have complained about, you know, that they were too broad and that at the time, but they were necessary and they haven't really been reined back in. And this is testing the boundaries of that.
Wayne writes and says, number 11 in the article of grievances to the king was the harboring of troops without permission within their cities, just saying. We go to Michael, who says, I assume a policing action requires the police, quote unquote, to wear identifying uniforms and to produce identity upon request. Is there a law about this? If so, the Portland and soon Chicago police should arrest these federal agents.
I think we should abolish ICE. I thought that was a good idea when it was immigrants that they were torturing and harassing. But now it's all of us citizens. This has been really a methodical rollout. Don't forget that it started before Portland. It started in D.C. when he brought in troops of unknown origin and with no insignia on them to stand at Lafayette Park and defend, I don't know, his photo op. This is incredibly sinister. And I don't know what the answer is. I'm not sure that it's a legislative response. Where's the military in this? Isn't the chief of staff upset that ICE officers and Homeland Security people are taking over, well, jobs that no military is supposed to have in this country, as far as I know?
Dave asks a question, which is, I'm by no means advocating an armed response, but wasn't the Second Amendment adopted as protection against this type of government overreach?
Yes, indeed. That's why those militias were supposed to be there and supposed to be allowed to be armed. And that's what gun control arguers have always made the point of. And yet, it's quite the opposite.
Kathleen says, GOP needs to man up. Trump sending paramilitary forces to Dem cities. Come on, as Rosemary says, they've been peaceful. Is this sort of thing okay with GOP leaders? Really? Some of them need to speak up. Are they not in favor of free speech? And John says, we now have a secret police in the form of the Department of Homeland Security. Why are there not nonstop commercials from the Democrats blasting the alarm about this? The Republicans are going to support this, all of them, wholeheartedly. I am losing hope. Do you think that's true, panel? And JP, I'll begin with you. Do you think the Republicans are going to support this wholeheartedly?
I think the Republicans see security as kind of their only way home in trying to protect their majority in the Senate and to potentially protect the White House in November. And they're going to paint the Democrats as weak on security. You know, the cities are out of control because of these Democratic mayors. So that's going to be their message. I don't see them going against the president on this. Rand Paul went against the president yesterday. He's a conservative, but I didn't hear many other Republicans going against the president on this.
Yes, and they're splitting
They wouldn't even go against them on payroll tax, which they genuinely don't like as an idea. And they're way more concerned about his horrible, incompetent response to coronavirus. The one good thing is that the president is going to bring back press conferences on coronavirus, and you can bet that reporters are going to be asking about this instead, though it has nothing to do with the virus.
And by the way, Rosemary, I think you're slightly off on this, and that is they never said, and the official title of these talks that the president is going to be giving is not on coronavirus. It's just his opportunity to talk to his country.
It's being listed as a press availability and not as a coronavirus task force.
But I think Rosemary's right. They will ask him
about
this.
Kellyanne, aren't they all talking about they want to hear from the president about, and that she mentioned it? Where have I gotten that idea from?
No, you're right. They say they want to start the briefings, but one of the things that has been reported out by the press is that in those briefings this is before the last one, which you will remember was the ingesting bleach press conference.
Unforgettable.
Oddly, the last one. After that, all of those had been labeled as an update from the coronavirus task force. These are being labeled by a press availability by the President of the United States. And
that's what they all were anyway.
Yes.
And Kellyanne was saying, I don't think they should be every day, and I don't think they should necessarily be 2 hours, but they should be there. And Pence was fighting for a return to briefings on the state of the epidemic. And certainly the response at the polls and from voters because of the bad way he's been handling this has they're all arguing for him to come back. And
right.
I'll bet you that he's going to try to promote the idea of vaccines and hope, and he's done just ducky. Remember when he stopped travel from and to China. So
Pence. Looking back on how this thing developed, Pence was doing okay. I'm not a Pence fan, of course, but he was doing okay, and he brought all the experts on, and a lot of people were watching it, nodding their heads. And then, of course, Trump couldn't stand it. That was obvious. And so he came in, took the whole thing over, down with Pence, down with the experts, and just blabbermouth, blabbering away, and which is what I think we're going to return to. Now, he sees his numbers going down since that time, and he makes the mistake of thinking that what's happened is that since his numbers are going down, it's the fact that he's not on the television anymore. No, I don't think that's true.
Yes, and he said the reason to have them is because they got really good ratings, not because the American people should be informed as to what is happening in regards to the coronavirus.
But don't you guys see this? Don't you see it as a do-over? You know, an effort to try to sort of fix the incoherent leadership that he's been delivering, and maybe get a redo of the way the nation responds to the coronavirus epidemic. I mean, it would be good if he did get that way. I mean, and we suddenly did have a single national plan that would help support it. But I think that ship has sailed. I don't know that he can effectively take back control now after having given it up, and this may be futile. And it may end up being all the sound bites may end up being the Joe Biden campaign commercials in a couple of weeks.
Right.
You can just see the suits all sitting around the table, the Republican suits saying, okay, we got to change this around. First of all, Mr. President, you want to win. You got to put on a mask. And you got to say, you know, it's patriotic to wear a mask. Of all the chutzpah. Exactly.
Yeah, he did. He did tweet that.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying it. Of all the chutzpah, of all the arrogance, he's killed, and I mean he's killed, tens of thousands of people because he fought the whole mask thing. Now they say, put the mask on. Put the mask on and say it's a patriotic act to do it. That is so, it really makes me nauseous to think, A, he's doing that, and B, he may get away with it.
JP?
I can't wait for his press conferences to begin. I think that to think that they will save him and stop his falling numbers is just idiocy on the part of his advisors. And I cannot wait to hear him defend, for example, why are you suddenly making this switch on masks? It should be delightful to watch.
Can I ask,
Rosemary and Alan, with that, you know, Trump's obviously 5 months late on the mask, and I think people will remember that, and it's cost tens of thousands of lives. As you talk to your friends and relatives and colleagues who are excited about the mask and aren't, it just so happens that all the Trump supporters say, you know what, for whatever reason, I don't like the mask. So it has cost tens of thousands of lives, and it is going to be must-see TV when he comes in to do his press conference. Will he wear the mask coming into the press conference? Will he try to have more of a regimented structure to the press conference? Probably not. You know, if I was him, I would try to exactly mimic what Andrew Cuomo does every day. I watch the Cuomo press conferences with bated breath. I love them. And the Trump press conferences were just, you know, were chaos from the beginning. The other thing that Cuomo does well in his press conferences is he limits questions. He takes four or five questions and says, thank you very much. And the Trump press conferences, I would skip over the preamble and just watch the Q&A. Many times he would take two and three questions from each reporter. And the later and later, the longer and longer they went, the worse and worse he would do.
And there's no... Well, go ahead, Mike.
No, I just had a question for everybody. I mean, they're calling them briefings. Is it automatic that the press, that Peter Alexander and his colleagues in the press corps will be able to actually ask questions? Do you think that will happen?
That's a good question.
Well, if they don't, then it looks even worse. And it's an authoritarian, dictatorial announcement. He walks off. He can't pull that off. Plus, he constitutionally is unable not to spar with reporters.
Right. That's true.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller on the group this morning. Part of the group this morning, making up the group this morning. We'll be right back after this. Before we move off this subject, I just wanted to read from the Post article, Washington Post article on this, in regards to Lindsey Graham, who, as we know, golfed with the president on both Saturday and Sunday. Graham told the Washington Post that Trump was going to be, quote, more involved on the virus, and he counseled him to hold events in the cabinet room or the Roosevelt room with business leaders or others while taking a few questions at the end. Graham said, adding that the original format was at times counterproductive, saying, quote, arguing with a reporter for 30 minutes doesn't help. The president, Graham said, wants to point to talk about a potential vaccine and some improvements in personal protective equipment, along with what the country is doing about testing and his animus toward China. I think you're going to see him very focused on the coronavirus, Graham said, adding that Trump is very angry with China.
Well, you know, we know that Trump rule number three, I believe, is you always have to have a boogeyman. And China's the boogeyman. I mean, now it's convenient. It's there. We're not going to mention the secret deals or the deals that his daughter has to make money from the Chinese, or the largesse that she's been granted by them, or the fact that he's had good things to say about his very good friend, President Xi. No, right now he needs the boogeyman, and he's got him.
Rosemary?
Yeah, that's completely right. I don't have anything else to add.
Thank you. JP.
Yeah. Come great. On, I've seen time when I don't have
no, anything. No, I understand.
No, I know. And my problem is that the refrigerator is right around the corner from where I'm speaking. And, you know, it's just so hopeless, this whole business about being at home and in proximity to food.
Alan, are you putting on weight?
No, in fact, I'm losing a little. I stepped on a scale this morning.
You're suggesting that I'm eating instead of paying attention to you all?
Well, you're doing something instead of paying attention.
No, I really...
Okay, I apologize.
Alan, I know that that's a rare thing, but I think you said it.
What's a rare thing? Rare steak.
That I agree with you and have nothing to add.
Mike, anything?
A boogeyman is his mode of operation, and Alan is right on.
Now, so start yelling at your favorite now. Was he not paying attention either?
By the way, Rosemary, you are so right. He is my favorite.
I didn't.
Dad likes me better.
I didn't expect it to go this way. I really didn't. I was asking this question about Lindsey Graham and the advice that he was giving the president of what you made of that idea. I'm gonna take...
don't like Lindsey Graham paying golf with the president for 2 days in a row in the middle of multiple crises. Why wasn't he talking to him about getting armed forces off of the streets of America?
Now, see, that's what I was looking for when I originally went to you.
Okay, I misunderstood the question.
Okay. She was busy. Come on, she was doing something else.
All right, let's go to a few letters. We'll give everybody a little time to hammer out whatever they have to do at home. Janice says, I hope someone in the press will have the guts to ask the so-called POTUS about Russian bounties for killing American and coalition soldiers. Why is the press ignoring this?
Good question. because there's armed forces in American streets?
Why don't they say no? Is this this is a question Jill has. Is this a lawful order for ICE or Homeland Security to go into these cities up against its own citizens incognito? Can't these agents refuse to obey these orders? Why don't they just say, hell no, we won't go?
Because that's not who they are. They were recruited to that agency for a reason. ICE, we know what this agency is all about. You know, I mean, I've been talking about this with the police and other things. When you start to recruit people for certain jobs, there's a certain type of character that sometimes gets attracted. Not always, but most of the time gets attracted because of the use of power, because of the use of authority. Sorry, folks, that's just the way it is.
Rosemary? You were starting to say that.
I think that's a really good question. We've asked it before about when immigrants were being ripped apart, their families were being ripped apart. And, yeah, it's a horrible order, and Trump and Nielsen deserved everything.
I'm losing you, Rosemary.
You're losing me? I'm
sorry. Oh, there we
right
go. Okay.
Here.
All right.
I'm right here. I was saying that when ICE agents, border agents, were ripping apart families, we criticized rightly Trump and Nielsen, but didn't we also talk about that guy on the border who went up to a little baby and pulled him out of his mother's arm? What kind of person does that? And it when is following orders breaking the law and doing horrible crimes against humanity? And I do think about these people who, do they support Trump? Do they hate immigrants and now apparently are their fellow citizens so much that they would do this? The description of what's going on in Portland, I just think, is terrifying, and it doesn't dissipate letting Putin take bounties on American lives. It doesn't change any of those other things, but this is not a distraction, and we have to pay attention to it. And, yeah, I think ICE is out of control. I think it's been used to Trump's advantage as a secret police force, as one of the writers said.
Right.
It's noteworthy that the attorney general in the state of Oregon has gone to court to block this. So, I mean, they're using the legal avenues to stop it, which will address the issue of whether this sort of secret police force that Trump has ordered into these cities is legitimate and has any legal standing.
You know, I watched the police commissioner on the television this very morning, articulate, bright guy, but he really had a lot of trouble answering the question of why things have gone so far out of control in our major cities. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that Trump has been given an opening by the fact that the crime rate is going up exponentially, right? So we may be liberal, some of us may be liberals, but nevertheless, you know, in Albany, in New York City, in Chicago,
Philadelphia. Yep.
Philadelphia, obviously things have to be done and controlled by those cities. And, you know, I think that one of the interesting things about the governor of New York is that he has criticized Mayor de Blasio and the police there for not bringing things under control. You know, when you don't do that, you really give this president the ability to go ahead with his divisive tactics and to do what he's doing with his secret police.
Yeah, but I echo what Rosemary said. What's going on in Portland is different. I mean, they're saying
absolutely
that there's 50 nights of anarchy. They don't, I mean, every city has crime, but I mean, it isn't like an out-of-control crime city like you might argue Chicago is with
right.
So many homicides. But and they're using that and portraying that as something, and it's a bit frightening. I mean, it's peaceful protest, but by and large, predominantly peaceful protest and you know, legal protest going on, and they're coming in there and kind of instigating maybe the most radical people by doing it.
There's no
well,
question.
There are a few protesters and instigators and radicals that kind of that are allow people to paint the peaceful protesters with this brush of they're all anarchists, they're all agitators. It's much like the police. Overwhelmingly, the vast majority of police officers are there putting their lives on the line to protect Americans in cities, and a few police officers, bad ones, allow opponents of the police to paint entire police forces with a broad brush. So because there are a few bad police officers and a few bad protesters and agitators, each one of those groups is being painted by the opposition in a broad negative brush.
And yet,
pause one other possibility, which is that at a time when police are under, rightly so, great pressure, calls for defunding, I think that there's been maybe a slowdown in many places, and that would account for an increase in crime, because that bolsters their position. It makes even liberals like us talk about, oh, the cities are out of control, and what do we do about that? Oh, we bring back the police. That just seems very, very convenient to me.
Alan, did you want to make a – we have to go to break. Just a final point.
Well, it makes me so uncomfortable to talk about this, but we saw it in the peace marches in the 60s and other times, and the civil rights marches. There are always a few opportunists who grab on and who get away with their malicious crap, you know, robbing, whatever else is going on. There's no question that a police commissioner of New York City went talked about this huge rise in the numbers of murders and other things, has to be able to say something. Now, I think you're on to something, Rosemary. Look, there is no question that the police themselves are under attack. There may be a little bit of, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, sense of, we're going to sit on our hands here. I don't know.
Let's pause. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll go to letters, we will go to other topics, and we'll continue our conversation with our wonderful panel. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller, panel at WAMC.org. If you want to join in on the fun, and why wouldn't you? We'll be right back. Go to a couple of letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics with our panel this morning. Welcome back to our discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters at panel at WAMC.org. D says, please explain where Trump gets the money for a federal police force. Is Congress no longer in control of the purse? Is the silent majority going to remain silent? It certainly looks that way. That's a good question. Rosemary, any idea where the money's coming from?
Well, he has proved himself a master at juggling funds from one column to the next, has he not? He got money for his wall, for example, when Congress multiple times rejected it. So this is easy. He just takes it from within the ICE budget, the giant Homeland Security budget.
Steph says, why is Lindsey Graham even hanging out with Trump? Isn't he busy? Is he a friend, an advisor to the president, or is he a member of Congress who provides checks and balances to the other bodies of government? Isn't this a conflict of interest?
I wouldn't say it's any... That's a good way to put it. But it is certainly legitimate for a member of Congress to access the executive branch and make offers of advice. And Trump likes to surround himself with people who hear what he likes to hear. You know, he likes to surround himself with people who aren't critical, but actually are. And Graham is good at being obsequious, as Rosemary said.
I'd like to go one step further and to say, I'm not sure I agree with that. As unlikely it is for me not to agree with you, Mike, or even Rosemary, the truth is here that the Republicans are showing some gumption on things like coronavirus, and they're splitting with him. And the reason that he's spending his time with them is that he desperately needs them. If they defect, he's done. So you better believe that Lindsey Graham, who has on occasion, as we all know, upended Trump and said to him, you know, we don't agree with this. I think that's the reason they're playing golf together, so that Trump can hammer him and hold him accountable personally to him.
So it's Trump that's sucking up to Lindsey Graham.
Without question.
Hmm.
Interesting.
We can all just say that. That's good.
Put up at all on coronavirus, including down to a payroll tax, which will just hurt Social Security along with the other institutions in this country. Is hurt. Where have the Republicans shown anything other than the kind of expression of concern about coronavirus?
What I want to know today, is whether the those voters who have been defecting from Trump in all of the polls are going to come back to him because the guy says, I'm going to put on a mask and it's your patriotic duty to wear one after tens of thousands of people are dead because of his inaction. That's what I want to know.
But he's not even really keeping it up, though. I mean, he even during the Chris Wallace interview on Sunday, I will tell you, if you haven't, I mean, I watched it, but if you haven't, if you get a chance, the Washington Post published the transcript. If you get a chance to read the transcript and you can sleep at night, well, good for you. Good on you.
I was just about to say that, Joe. I was going to correct you. It's good on you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
It is just unbelievable. But I mean, it's one of those things where he says it and then he does it and then he doesn't really agree with it. And then he says you don't need him. And he makes a statement that was said by Dr. Fauci and by the Surgeon General back in February about masks, and makes it sound like they said it yesterday that they shouldn't wear masks. And it's, I don't know, it just seems like it's right back where it was before. We got a letter from George who says that we were talking about the crime rate, and so the crime rate was going up. The crime rate in this country actually has been going down for years, says George. Since the COVID-19 crisis, it's been going down even further. You can look it up. I think we were talking about it in these particular, Chicago and Philadelphia. And
you should have seen the police commissioner crying the blues this morning on the television on CNN. Come on. You know, that there's no question that in Washington and in Chicago, in Philadelphia, the crime rate right now is going up. The murder rate is going up, and there's no two ways about it. So while you may be right about crime rate going down nationwide, you're not right about the cities.
We go to Geraldine, who says, are you sure that the bad apples among the peaceful protesters are not provocateurs sent in by Trump? Dave says, we are in the middle of a pandemic. Thousands of people have died. Millions have lost their jobs, their homes, their health care. Blacks are being murdered on the streets. The planet is warming to a point that human life is in danger. And you ask, why are people in the streets protesting? No, I think the question we were asking is, why are more people not in the streets protesting?
Now, we're also trying to figure out, at least one letter early on, wondered, took some issue with me, because I said if the president refuses to leave the White House, there have been those who said, oh, no, he'll be escorted out. And I say, I'm not so sure of that. And that's led to a certain amount of consternation on the panel. Nevertheless, we got to figure out whether the people who are protesting outside will do one of two things. A, will they vote? One thing to go in the street, it's another, will you vote? Those of us who've been in a classroom long enough to know, that's no easy proposition. And the second thing, will they do, is will they be willing to risk themselves and make the case that they should pull this guy out of there? I don't know.
During that interview with Chris Wallace asked Trump that very question, will you accept the results of the election? And Trump demurred over and over again, saying, we'll see, we'll keep you in suspense, we'll see. And they played back the old clips from he and Hillary back in 2016. You're right, Joe, that interview with Chris Wallace kept getting more and more interesting as Wallace asked him questions, because, you know, Wallace is no fan of Trump and asked him a lot of tough questions. And Trump, of course, gets upset when he gets questioned by who he views should be favorable to him, people at Fox News.
There was one line in it that made me mad where I maybe this is nitpicking, but I'm going to do it anyway, where they were talking about this was on the transfer of power. And and Chris Wallace said, well, there's a tradition in this country. One of the prides of this country is the peaceful transition of power. And Trump says, well, what I'm saying is I will tell you at the time, I'll keep you in suspense. And Trump said, and you know what? Hillary was the one that never accepted it. And Chris Wallace says, I agree. Trump says she never accepted her loss and she looks like a fool. How did she not accept the loss?
Perhaps that's a, you know, a reference to the reiteration that she had 3 million more votes. But I never remember her saying that so much as people who supported her pointing it out a lot. And
yeah,
it's a fact that but she got
morning,
3 million more votes.
The yeah. morning after the election, she went into a ballroom at the New Yorker Hotel on 34th Street and said, I lost.
Yep. Yep. Peaceful transfer. I mean, she didn't have power to transfer anyway.
That's right.
A peaceful
yes.
transfer of power.
A good point. Go ahead, JP.
The best part of the Chris Wallace interview, I apologize if you went over this yesterday, was that both men were wearing suits and sweating profusely. It was 100 degrees in Washington, D.C., and Trump is just, his whole face is covered in sweat. And Wallace keeps saying, you know, we can go inside. We wanted to do the interview inside. You're the one that insisted on doing it outside. And Trump said, oh, I'm totally comfortable. What are you talking about?
It is funny.
Yeah, that interview was a model of journalism preparation and timing. And Chris Wallace, wow, I'm a fan now.
Yeah, he did
it's
it.
Genetic.
yeah, and they talk about his father in the end of the interview, and it's and Chris Wallace, I thought it was interesting too, JP, how he said Chris Wallace starts to defend himself. You know, it says, look, I ask these questions to Democrats, I ask these questions to Republicans. I know you think I'm a Democrat, I am a journalist, and these are the questions that I ask people.
Well, and he asked Trump directly about the claims in Mary Trump's book about his dead father being basically a son of a gun. And to ask Trump that, you could tell that Wallace got that was the only part where Wallace got a little bit uncomfortable asking the questions. But that is a tough question to ask the president of the United States, staring straight across from the man, saying that basically, what was your father a bad guy? Was he, he didn't say, was he abusive, but he got as close to saying, was he abusive as you could without saying those words.
Right. And saying, this isn't somebody from the outside saying this, this is a member of your own family saying this.
Yeah.
Tim writes to us and says, a Trump miscalculation. Trump is underestimating the effect of sending in his brown shirts. This is such an egregious action that it will only inspire and encourage more citizens like me to go into the streets to stand against this outrageous situation. Trump should think of the news coverage when senior citizens, grandmothers, veterans, and other law-abiding Americans are dragged away by his henchmen.
Well, it did happen in Portland. They said after this, after the reports Friday of this sort of secretive government SWAT team coming in and plucking people off the street, the numbers of people who began to come out, and they've been coming out every night in various numbers, but the numbers of people coming out in Portland and peacefully protesting swelled. And that's a very hopeful sign that people want to affirm that we have the right to protest and we have a First Amendment. So it backfired on him, in my opinion.
Well, let's remember, though, I'm not a Trump defender, but let's remember it isn't the cities that he's after. He knows he loses in the cities. It's the burbs.
Right.
And that is what his target is. Now, if you were to tell me that you knew that there was a poll, Mike, that showed that the suburbs were more furious with Trump than before because he's lost them, I would say you have a point, and I would hope you'd have a point.
But didn't in 2018, wasn't that a significant aspect to the Democrat takeover of the House of Representatives?
It was.
The suburbs that hit
it was.
Trump, right.
It
yeah.
was. It got the House got blue, You know, but the Democrats could take some solace in it. But as Alphonse D'Amato once said, as you all know, that was then and this is now.
Yep.
So Jason Rice-Suison says the reason the crime rate is going up, people have no jobs and no money. They're... are millions who are literally destitute and desperate. Don't blame radicals. The radicals are the Trump administration.
Well, there's room enough for everybody. But, you know, one of the reasons the Congress passed that $600 amount for everybody to exist on was because they knew that they could not leave people to the point where they were it was either steal or nothing. No, I mean, I've been around long enough to know that every time there is social protest, there will be a few bad characters, not who have their hands out because they're needy, but who are, you know, who are intent on bringing things down. Sorry, that's just the way it is.
Melissa has a subject line of a few bad apples, so fits perfectly into what we were just talking about. Police brutality cannot be compared to agitators among peaceful protesters. There are not a few badly behaved officers. The racism is systemic. We go to Martina, who says Clinton also congratulated Trump on election night. Also, it's not up to Trump to accept the election result. It is the will of the people. Good point.
Well, yeah, it's a good point if he doesn't wreck the system and change it, a la Hitler or Stalin or any of those people who just said, you know, there may be in Russia, everybody has to vote. Yeah, but when they have to vote the same way. You know, Hitler had minorities, but he did what he had to do. And now Trump is saying, I'll see during the election as to whether or not I'm going to support the results. That's ridiculous.
Well, look back to the year 2000 when on election night, all of a sudden there was just a handful of votes in Florida, which would tip it either way. And Al Gore, you know, asserted his legitimate right to have those votes checked and a recount in the state of Florida, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court because it got so convoluted. I mean, if Al Gore was able to legitimately do that, and it was a big question back then, I mean, Rosemary, you were there, you know,
yes.
It had, if there's any kind of question of legitimacy or the count of the vote, Trump could just drag this out. He's good at dragging things out, making things last a long, long time. I mean, it could be very confusing after November 3rd.
It's
can I reemphasize the point that we've made, and I think it's been lost, is that Hillary could have disclaimed all she wanted about I didn't really lose, I need to be in there. The transfer of power refers to one president giving way to another. So if Obama had said, oh, my Hillary won, I'm not going to let you in, Trump, that would have been similar to this. He's
right.
Talking about something different. This is the actual president of the United States not guaranteeing that, of course, he would obey the will of the people in voting. And if the vote is, if he can challenge it, so can Trump. I mean, Trump can go to court about it, but still, when Inauguration Day comes, as supplied in the Constitution, he needs to move if that is the vote of the people.
And who stands? Yeah,
we never had a,
go ahead,
we
JP.
Ever had a situation, JP, where a president was refusing to go?
Not that I'm aware of, but what's really going to set the stage for this is there are going to be a record number of absentee ballots and mail-in ballots that are still going to be counted days and days and weeks after the election, with 24-hour news coverage by the media trying to figure out who won these different states. And I'm very fearful that it's going to be super chaotic and divisive. We saw here in New York a lot of elections that took place a couple weeks ago are just being decided now. And luckily, you know, they weren't by big margins. People said, okay, I lost. They conceded. But is Trump going to go easily? I don't think so.
And who's going to be doing
it? For 100 years, we had a two-month delay between when people voted and when the votes were known. We didn't always have calculators. That never was a problem then. We saw this in 2018 where we didn't have a lot of races decided until days and weeks after the election. There's a two-month lag. That should take care of any absentee ballots or disputes. And by that time, on January 20th, that's when the transfer of power becomes operative, not on November whatever the day is this week.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm concerned about who's counting the votes. I'm concerned about secretaries of state, because after all, these are state elections that have to be certified.
Well, you should be. That's what happened in Florida. It was the secretary
exactly.
of state there.
And it's one of the reasons.
Really threw the election.
Yeah, that's true, and it's one of the reasons.
Manipulated, by the way, by the Bushes, by Jeb Bush, who was governor at the time.
And it's one of the reasons, exactly. And it's one of the reasons I'm not a big Al Gore fan. Gave up way too easily.
He stood up much more for statesmanship, for doing what was right rather than win at all costs, which is always the Republicans' modus operandi. And I will point you to the new resolution to name a new justice to the Supreme Court before the end of the year, if they can, if there's any way to figure it out. And I bet Mitch is working his little butt off on that project.
And he's already, and by the way, he's already said so. First he said to the Democrats, you can't do it within a year. And now he's saying, oh, yes, you can.
Well, just getting back to that one thing, didn't Richard Nixon in 1960 grudgingly accept and allow for the, you know, election results to be certified after the questions about Chicago votes and whether JFK really did win? I mean, didn't Nixon step up and do the right thing? Did he?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I think it's been pointed out numerous times that Trump is worse than Nixon because Nixon always observed the rule of law. That was never a question. Even when the Supreme Court said hand over the tapes, which was the end of him, and he knew it, he obeyed. Do you have that same trust in this president?
That was a great sound.
We have about 5 minutes before we have to go to break. I want to get the story in before we do. Florida Teachers Union sues over return to in-person classes as debate over school during the pandemic intensifies. This is a debate that is intensifying across these United States of America, and teachers in Florida are suing. They are going after the largest teachers union, are suing top state officials over an order mandating a return of in-person schooling, drawing the courts into an increasingly politicized nationwide debate over when and how kids can return to class amid the coronavirus pandemic. The suit is from the Florida Education Association, asking a judge to stop Governor Ron DeSantis and Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran from requiring the return of in-person schooling without first reducing class sizes and ensuring that educators have adequate protective supplies. It seems like this was always going to go to court, and this is the first suit that we have heard of. So,
to which I say, which court, which judge, number one. And number two, my bet is that the teachers are going to lose this one. It's too bad, because they're absolutely right. No question. If you were a teacher, would you want to put your life at risk? But my bet is that those courts are not going to stand up and do what's right.
The courts in Florida, do you think, Alan? But if it
were the Republican governor,
right,
who appoints Republican judges, who are responsible to him. Come on. I've never believed that the law, you know, is impartially interpreted. John Roberts said it is. I say it isn't. Look at those four people on the Supreme Court who vote as a herd no matter what. Come on. And the judges know what they're supposed to do here. My bet is the teachers are going to lose, but it's a point worth making.
Who wants in?
Why do you think they're going to lose, Alan?
What?
Why do you think they're going to lose?
I just think that the judges aren't going to have the guts to do it.
Okay, so not for a legal.
Okay. I just got through Rosemary saying that Robert says.
I'm trying to get this clear. I have looked at it to try to figure out what standing they would have.
Exactly.
Because it's so similar to in New York State and the college. Teachers are very worried about whether or not they're in danger. And it seems to me that being worried about your own life, self-preservation, is something that's an issue you can make. I get your thing about politics, but I'm wondering if there was more to it, if there's some flaw in their thinking or their standing.
Nope.
Well,
I believe this one.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
JP.
I think a huge problem with the Florida order is they're basically saying, no matter what, you must be in school teaching kids. And this year is going to be obviously a frustrating year for students, teachers, and parents. But what New York has done is basically said, in each community, we're going to let the data and the statistics drive whether we are in school teaching the students, as opposed to Florida's mandate, which is basically you have to be in schools doing it. And, you know, it, obviously the best thing for the kids is to be taught in person with a public school teacher in front of them. But, you know, obviously New York has a much better approach to it, which is basically we are going to let the numbers and the data drive the decisions. We are not, us humans are not going to make the decisions. The numbers are going to make the decisions as to whether students are in school in a given community.
Mike.
Yeah, no, you have it, JP. I mean, the question in Florida specifically is whether the governor has the emergency authority to order this, and whether there's other, you know, whether it does violate the Constitution of the state of Florida, which calls for safe and secure schools. And that should be what it rides on. But Alan, you know, you're right. I mean, politics do enter into it, and sometimes courts want to avoid having to make difficult decisions.
Don't you think there's a similarity between this case and Governor Kemp in Georgia trying to stop Atlanta's mayor from instituting a mask law?
That is one of the strangest, Rosemary, that is one of the strangest situations I've ever seen. Here Kemp goes around and says, hey, he beats his chest and says, I'm all for masks. Then he says, but I don't want the mayor telling people in her town, in our city, that they have to wear masks. It's just unbelievable.
Let's take a break. We're running out of time, but we'll come back on the other side and talk about that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Last call here at 10:33 on this Tuesday morning. We have a wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and JP Miller, and we welcome your letters, panel at wamc.org. So I want to talk a little bit, we touched, we sort of went around this, but we didn't really get into the subject, which is, what is this coronavirus bill going to look like? The GOP coronavirus bill is likely to include a payroll tax cut and tie school money to reopening plans. This picking up on what we were just talking about before the break. Also, some of these provisions are already sparking pushback from key Senate Republicans and even a bigger showdown with Democrats, which appears inevitable. That clash could come today when Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows are set to meet with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer for the first bipartisan talks on what will almost certainly be the last major coronavirus relief bill before the November elections. Mnuchin and Meadows will also meet with Senate Republicans on Tuesday as they seek to quell any discontent. In a sign of the hard sell the White House faces, Senate Finance Committee Chairman Charles Grassley sounded skeptical when asked about the payroll tax cut on Monday night. Grassley said, I think you better ask me after Tuesday so we can hear from the administration if they're really serious about it. All right. So what should it include? What will it include? And what's going to happen?
Well, the first question is, where will it come out? You know, the House Democrats won 3 million...
trillion.
I'm so sorry, you are so right. I do that all the time. 3 trillion, and the other guys want 1 trillion. The Republicans want 1 trillion. So I'm assuming there's going to be a compromise. My bet is that compromise will be $2 billion. That's my bet. It won't be 1.5 because I think the Republicans have gone low. And I think the payroll tax cut is just part of Trump's usual rhetoric. And I think when guys like Grassley, who is no great liberal, starts to say, you know, talk to me later about it, it indicates there's no great appetite for it in the Senate Republicans.
Rosemary?
I think that money for testing is going to be a huge issue. I think Trump actually does want to squelch money for that. Payroll, maybe he is just making noise. I don't get that. You know, why is payrolls tax, a cut in that would only help people who are working, which in this problem right now that we have with the economy, it's people not working who are at issue. A payroll tax cut doesn't help them a sliver. Money for testing would help everyone, and that he really is opposed because he has this weird idea that no one can shake him from, that the more you test, the worse your numbers look. The other problem, as Alan pointed out, is how much money will be allotted, and also, I guess, who it will go to. Are the states going to get any relief? We've not seen that up to now. I know Democrats under a lot of pressure to help out the states because Trump has not. And we've not heard from any of the Democrats yet. So I think the bill that we're looking at right now is far different from what we're finally going to see. This is where Pelosi does her best work.
JP.
Yeah, it's hard to know what the number is because it's basically the Senate Republicans fighting for less dollars. The Democrats want more dollars, and Trump wants more dollars. Trump is no fiscal conservative. He will spend as much as the Democrats are willing to spend, and so it's a question of how much Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans can hold back Trump and the Democrats in terms of a big spending bill.
Mike?
What I wonder is if they're going to quickly agree to extend the unemployment insurance past the end of this month, which is running out, and then give them a little more leeway to do the rest of things. And as Rosemary pointed out, this payroll tax, I just don't understand, other than I have the fear that for a long time, some very conservative people have been trying to undermine the Social Security Trust Fund and the Medicare Trust Fund. And by not contributing to that, for millions of Americans, it will cost these funds billions of dollars. And that's, you know, that serves a long-term agenda of people thinking that, you know, some people who think that those are just entitlements and we ought to just privatize all that. And, you know, the Paul Ryan stuff, the stuff that goes back to George W. Bush even, you know, so it there's a political agenda there. And maybe that'll be his bartering for, you know, taking money away from more testing, which he does not want. Clearly from the Chris Wallace interview, he does not want more testing. This is going to be very dramatic.
Mnuchin and other White House officials have faced enormous pushback from lawmakers in both parties over blocking this funding, with Senator Roy Blunt telling reporters that the idea was wrong. Blunt also criticized the proposal to put conditions on education funding for school districts. The president has made the payroll tax cut a major sticking point and said that he may not sign the legislation if it doesn't include the cut. McConnell appears set to include the provision in his bill. There were signs Monday, however, that he could face difficulties getting Senate Republicans to fall in line. So when the Democrats get into this, where do you think they're going to come out and obviously try to do the right thing while also keeping an eye on the election?
Well, the thing about Trump is he can't afford to lose another one. He sees everything as I win or you lose,
right,
or I lose. So therefore, you can almost see the little soldiers being lined up, little tin soldiers. You remember those?
Yeah.
John, yeah. The little tin soldiers being
Land
lined
of counterpane.
Up.
Yes.
Yeah. That's it.
It's hard for me to see how the Democrats have a bad bargaining position in this vis-a-vis the election. They're arguing for help the unemployed, help schools, test so that we can get control of the coronavirus, and protect Social Security. Aren't those all things that are generally popular with the American voter?
Now they are. I don't know that they always would be.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean they're not going to fight over it, right?
No, there'll be a fight because, as I say, Trump cannot afford to lose one in his own mind. So therefore, he's got to put up objections and objectives. You know, Rosemary, you make a very good point. The Democrats have the upper hand here, but Trump is Trump.
Yeah,
and,
you know, the...
this is Nancy Pelosi's forte, is to take a crappy piece of legislation or a treaty proposal from the Trump administration and to inject it with all kinds of Democratic stuff, and then Trump crows about what a wonderful job he did. So I think she's busy at work right now.
Mike,
you can bet on it.
Yeah, well, I just am concerned because initially when we were talking about, the stimulus bills, a lot of Republicans portrayed it as what the Democrats want is a bailout of the liberal states, you know, whose finances are bad. But all the states, all the school districts, all the municipalities are desperately needing some kind of federal aid in order to just function. And it's going to be really sad at the local level if we don't have some way to make up for the lost tax revenue, the income tax revenue, the sales tax revenue that hasn't been going into state and local budgets over the last 6 months. So it's that hasn't been talked about directly, but that's what Chuck Schumer's been making the rounds talking about in upstate New York. It's going to be a desperate look at the subway in New York City, $16 billion in debt now because of the coronavirus.
Mm. And of course, that's the same number, Mike, that Andrew Cuomo keeps telling us about in terms of the state budget altogether. $16 billion. And I think that's very low, to be honest with you. So it's interesting that Cuomo is keeping his mouth shut about this negotiation, but he has certainly said to Gillibrand and to Chuck, you better bring home the bacon on this one, or this state is in real trouble. And that, I think, goes a long way to explain why Schumer is so adamant about money for the states.
Anyone else? All right. I want to go to one more topic, and we have about 5 minutes left for this, and that is there was an interesting article in the New York Times I just wanted to touch on, and this is taking a look. It is a Nate Cohn article about the polling that is coming out regarding the presidential race. By all accounts, the polls show Joe Biden leading anywhere from 8 to 15 points. Nate Cohn in this article released last night saying Joe Biden's commanding advantage in the race for the White House shows no signs of abating. He led by 15 percentage points in an ABC News Washington Post survey of registered voters on Sunday, and he has held a nearly double-digit lead in an average of polls for more than a month. The last time a candidate sustained such a large advantage for so long was nearly 25 years ago when Bill Clinton led Bob Dole in 1996. The headline to the article is Big Polling Leads Tend to Erode. Is Biden's Edge Different? As his advantage endures well into its second month, it becomes harder to assume that it's just another fleeting shift. Alan.
I don't know. You know, people like Michael Dukakis and others have been were way ahead for a while, but they lost. I think the main thing that the Democrats can't afford to do is to discount the fact that Trump could win. Because if they do discount it, and if Trump is seen as, you know, somebody who is going to get beaten, you're not going to get that many feet showing up at the polls or answering the mail or doing what they have to do. So I think that a lot has to do with the expectations from people as to what's going to happen.
Mike.
Yeah, I think the groundwork will be getting the vote out. If Democrats really do want to have a significant impact, they're going to have to not just beat Trump and find out about it 3 weeks later when all the votes come in on absentee ballots, but they're going to have a decisive victory that clearly establishes a rejection of Trump. And that will give Biden and whoever he picks to be his vice president and his cabinet the mandate to begin to kind of steer the country in a different direction.
JP?
I think it's hard for Trump to make the case that he should be reelected when he inherited a 5 to 6% unemployment rate from Barack Obama, and the unemployment rate is now 11%. So I think that all arrows point to Trump losing reelection and losing in a historic fashion. And the only person that can beat Joe—I don't think Trump can beat Biden. The only person that can beat Biden right now is Biden. Biden just needs to, you know, stay low. And
stay
let
alive.
Trump do his dirty work for him.
That's right, Joe.
And Rosemary, even though you're maybe not the favorite, you certainly will give you the last word.
Oh, good. I like that. I've been very worried about this. I think Joe Biden has an immense capacity to beat himself and to help Trump. And I do remember 2016. Two things give me hope. Yes, Rosemary, talking about hope. One is that this is not 2016. It's not like Trump is a whole new chance to try something new. He's a proven disaster. So voting for him now means something different than it did in 2016. And second is he's going back on the air for public viewing, and that means he will be the one with the capacity to make huge errors.
That's all true, but weren't you the one who said that Trump was going to win, Rosemary? Maybe I got that wrong.
Alan, yes, I have always read. I didn't say he would win, but he's always a contender, and he still is.
I could swear you said he was going to win.
Whether it would be historic, and I increasingly have said you may be right, I did not predict, in fact, who could have, maybe you were prescient, that he would so botch the coronavirus in addition to all the other problems that he has had as governing.
Well said, Rosemary, well said.
It's true. It is possible, and God knows I want you to be right.
All right. With that said, we are going to close this chapter of the panel discussion for this July 21st. My thanks to our wonderful panel. Alan, thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you, Joe.
Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and JP Miller, you all are great. Thank you so much as well.
Thank you.
All right. And we will...
rumble.
Thank you all very much, and we'll be back right after this.